dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing. Intelligence starts with understanding both who we are and who the enemy is. I believe there is no one in America, certainly professionally in the business of public opinion research, who understands better who we are, what we're thinking, what moves us, than our first guest. She is the marvelous Kellyanne Conway. She founded The Polling Company in 1995 and is its president. She also has Women Trend, a research and consulting division that focuses principally on female sentiments of particular relevance to corporate America, and is just an extraordinary national asset, I believe. And this was in evidence yesterday at the National Security Action Summit that the center convened with two distinguished co-sponsors, Impact America and Breitbart News Network. Kellyanne Conway, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you.
Frank, it's wonderful to be with you.
Kellyanne, you laid out for the company at our meeting yesterday brand new results of some opinion research that the Center for Security Policy actually commissioned, but looking specifically at public sentiment at this moment in time about national security. And please give us a sense of what you found.
Frank, absolutely. These results are based on two focus groups we conducted last week, one among voters across the state of Florida and one among voters across the state of Ohio. We follow that up with a nationwide survey of registered voters, 1,000 interviews, so it has a pretty low margin of error and it has a pretty healthy indication of where Americans are right now. Now, where is that? Certainly, security is the major theme going into these elections. So you hear many candidates try to talk about job security, healthcare security, economic security. Of course, those are important to Americans, but those really have been the number one issues for about 7 or 8 years now. It just so happens that national security and border security, particularly the last couple of months, where seeing has become believing for many Americans watching their TV sets, seeing what's happening with beheadings by ISIS, seeing what's happening with Syria, with Russia, with China, with an increasingly emboldened and nuclear-capable Iran. Americans are very focused on this. And, of course, as we look to these elections and even playing it forward to 2016, Frank, I'd say security mom has returned, if in fact she ever receded. So the female focus on national security and border security is increasing and crystallizing. There's compassion and common sense, this call to really protect the U.S., U.S. citizens, U.S. allies, and U.S. interests here and abroad. There's also an impulse throughout these data, Frank, to tell our leaders that, hey, you're not doing enough. 71% of those surveyed said that the leaders in Washington are not doing enough to meet the challenges of today's global threats, whether that's terrorism, whether that's threats to our electrical grid, whatever, and homegrown terrorism, porous border, all of that put together, 7 in 10 are telling Washington, you're falling down on the job. And let me just mention for you and your listeners, Frank, that that begins with President Obama, who is seen as weak and feckless on foreign policy and national defense. He has a 53% disapproval rating on those issues. But if I were the Republican Party, I wouldn't do the victory lap yet, because we asked, which party do you think handles national security and foreign policy better? Which one do you trust more in these issues? Republicans had a 9-point advantage over Democrats, 41% to 32%. But the real news in that question, Frank, is the number of Americans who said, I don't know, or neither one. And that was closer to a quarter of the population. So there's much leadership to be shown on this. And what is it that people want? What do they believe the solutions are? They're pretty straightforward about it. They're very in favor of peace through strength. That is the best strategy. It is not a slogan. And this includes 65% of liberals, 80% of blacks, 84% of Hispanics, and 75% of millennial women all agree that peace through strength is the best strategy for protecting the United States.
Striking data. And one of the things that you tested too, Kellyanne Conway of the Polling Company, was the alternative, which has been advanced by some, including some in the Republican ranks, of let's just disengage from the world. If we leave them alone, they'll leave us alone. What did you find the American people thought of that idea?
Well, they thought a couple of things. First of all, they believe disengagement is dangerous. And this whole idea that if we leave them alone, they'll leave us alone is completely rejected by the American population, including many of these so-called leftist center voting cohorts, Frank, those who gave President Obama his victory twice, those who probably are a little bit more dovish when it comes to foreign policy and national security traditionally. But as I was saying earlier, they know what they see. And they're watching Western citizens being beheaded. They're watching people on TV and in social media directly threatening our nation, our president, our people. And they know, because they all lived through 9/11, that an attack on our soil it may not be imminent, but it also may not be inevitable.
Yeah. Well, and they saw a woman beheaded in Oklahoma last week. So this is
hardly a workplace incident, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're being told that.
But they also, you know, they're pretty. Firm also, Frank, to your point, on the whole notion that better over there than here. And when we ask the question, you know, which of the following do you think is the most important reason for the U.S. to continue fighting terrorists, we gave them three choices. The plurality, most popular response was, let's continue fighting terrorists over there because, quote, if we stopped, our enemies would be emboldened to attack us here on our soil. That's 35%, and it's comparable numbers of Hispanics and African Americans as well. Then 18% said, as a world power, we still have interest to protect overseas. 15% said, we can't stop this war or further attacks from our enemies unless we either defeat them or surrender to them. And one in five of the voters we surveyed, Frank, volunteered all of the above, even though we were trying to force them to choose the most important. They refused to choose and said, listen, it's all of the above.
It is all of the above, unfortunately. Again, our guest is Kellyanne Conway of the polling company, a preeminent public opinion researcher and consultant to people who actually are interested in the facts, not false realities that shape so much of our political life these days. Kellyanne, we had in your panel at the National Security Action Summit yesterday, Anne-Marie Morrell, who's just written, co-authored a book about what women really want. We had Pauline Olvera, a prominent Hispanic Republican from Colorado. We had E.W. Jackson, the former lieutenant gubernatorial candidate for Virginia, prominent black pastor in Virginia, talking about their personal experiences, which seemed to track very strongly with what you found in the focus group, what you found in the new national survey. Given all of this, given what we've learned, is it possible that even at this late date in campaign 2014, that these kinds of data and what they suggest about the real aspirations and expectations of the American people might feature in a significant and consequential way?
Yes, indeed, Frank. In fact, if you look at the U.S. Senate races, the contested races in the so-called swing states, they're probably anywhere from 8 to 12, depending on your view. And what strikes me as the common point in each of those races is that they're all stuck in the mid-40s. You look at any of these polls, 43%, 45%, on a good day, 47%, back down to 43%. Okay, well, we already know they're talking in favor of jobs, the economy, growth. We already know they're talking against President Obama and Obamacare. So that's already baked in the cake. Voters have already assimilated all of those 1, 2, 3 issues into their large voter cauldron, which they stir up and from which they eventually make a choice. What's the extra juice that's going to get these candidates the 3, 4, 5 points they need to get over 50 and stay there and, in fact, win 4 or 5 weeks from now? The answer is security. It certainly is border security, and it absolutely is national security. And it really is fascinating to me that when people say, oh, well, national security is not important anymore. Look, it doesn't register in the polls when you ask people what's the most important issue. It does when you force the conversation. In other words, it does when you respect voters enough, as we do, to engage in conversation and not just respond to silly sound bites and feel-good phraseology, and not when you're competing against putting food on your table or keeping your job or your home intact. That's not a fair fight. But the idea that Americans aren't always focused on not just their own prosperity, but on indeed the survival of our entire nation and civilization.
And their children and grandchildren, too, not least. What you found, I think, Kellyanne, which is so comforting to me, really, is the common sense of the American people, and actually a degree of being clued up about a lot of these problems that I think their politicians, or would-be representatives at least, don't give them credit for. Thank you for this data. The poll is superb. We will have it available on our website, securefreedom.org, today. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate both your expertise and the extraordinary clarity with which you present these findings. Come back to us again, if you would, soon, Kellyanne Conway. Next up, Admiral Ace Lyons joins us. We'll talk with him about his take on the war we're in from the National Security Action Summit. And straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Are you looking to hire an IT specialist, or a logistics expert, a medical technician, or a security professional? Well, there are some very qualified candidates out there. America's wounded warriors. These men and women returning from battle are eager to get back to life at home and a good job. Some have wounds you can see, and some have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. For these accomplished professionals, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These warriors have world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork. And to ensure proper placement for each individual, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right candidate for the job. When your company is looking to hire talented, highly trained employees, contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we are joined by one of my personal heroes, a military officer of great distinction, a man who served some 36 years in the United States Navy, rising through the ranks from seaman to a four-star admiral and commander of the U.S. Pacific Fleet. In that capacity, he was responsible for the largest area of operations in the United States military and comported himself with great distinction, as he has ever since. Now, out of uniform, he is, I'm pleased to say, the chairman of the Senate for Security Policy's Military Committee. He is, of course, Admiral James Ace Lyons. Admiral Lyons, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio, sir.
Nice to be here, Frank.
Thank you. You were one of the stars of the National Security Action Summit that MPACT America and the Breitbart News Network and the Center for Security Policy hosted yesterday in Washington, D.C. You spoke with characteristic fervor about some concerns you have about the war we're fighting at the moment, notably against this outfit, the Islamic State. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Problem is, we haven't faced up to the fact that Islam is a political movement masquerading as a religion. And we haven't come to grips with that. And we keep trying to make something, make excuses for what it isn't, but what it actually is. And we hamstring our people with the ridiculous restricted rules of engagement. We're sacrificing our people, as we've done in the past, on the restricted rules of engagement in the failed hope of trying to win the hearts and minds of a tribal society.
We're visiting with Admiral Ace Lyons. He is currently the president of Lyons Associate, a regular contributor to the Washington Times, and chairman of the Center for Security Policy's Military Committee. And Ace, you were just describing sort of conditions that are afflicting us in terms of the character of an enemy we're fighting, the strategy we're using to fight them, that sound as though we can't possibly win if they're being applied. Is that your take on it at the moment?
Well, with this administration and the way they're going about it, we are not going to win it. You can't go after the Islamic State with pinprick airstrikes and not have a viable force on the ground to retake territory once they vacate it. We need a massive, around-the-clock air campaign. In fact, I've recommended that we have a forward operating base established in Kurdistan, which is the only really reliable ally we have in that region other than Israel. And we should be providing direct military support to the Peshmerga, the Kurdistan military forces. We cannot lose sight, though, of our main enemy. And our main enemy is Iran. And there's absolutely no way we can permit them to achieve a nuclear weapon capability.
It sounds as though what we are doing, Admiral Lyons, is losing sight of Iran, to say nothing of other adversaries, notably in what seems to be a very artificial delimitation of our focus. At the moment, even Al-Qaeda seems to be over the side in favor of a group that admittedly is Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State. But is this the latest sort of shiny, dangling object that we are focusing on and missing the larger problem, of which Iran is clearly a leading edge, namely global jihad?
It's absolutely. You're quite right, Frank. You know, let's face it. 80% of the mosques in the United States preach Islamic jihad. And it's sedition. These mosques should be shut down. Their preachers should be expelled from the United States. You know, we have to face up this idea that Islam is a religion of peace is nonsense. 62% of the Quran is all about violence.
There are Muslims who clearly are peaceable, but they are not the authorities of the faith, that's for sure, and they're not the ones that are currently engaged in the effort to impose this doctrine of Sharia on the rest of us. And Ace, you also made the point yesterday of a concern that you have about chaplains in the United States military and U.S. prison system being recruited and trained and credentialed by Muslim brothers and the like. What's up with that?
Well, you know, as you recall, Frank, Alamundi under President Clinton, who is currently serving a 23-year prison sentence for funding terrorism specifically to Hamas, he was Clinton's principal advisor on selecting clerics to go into our chaplain corps. And as far as I know, none of those chaplains have been vetted. And you can rest assured every one of them had the endorsement of the Muslim Brotherhood, who has infected, as you well know, every one of our national security agencies.
And who are a part of the problem that we're discussing here, those who are seeking through jihad to impose Sharia upon us. Admiral, we are almost out of time. I've got two other questions that I really want to get your expertise on. And again, our guest is Admiral Ace Lyons, President of Lyons Associate and former Commander-in-Chief Pacific Fleet. We are apparently expending, almost to the point of exhausting our inventory, the Tomahawk sea-launched cruise missiles now being rained down upon this Islamic State group and I guess the Khorasan group. We'll be talking with Andy McCarthy about that shortly. Admiral Lyons, this is happening as the administration, as I understand it, seeks to close the production line for these missiles. Talk, if you would, quickly about what the implications for the Navy and the nation would be were we to run out our stocks of these cruise missiles.
Well, that's part of our threat-oriented munition. That's the thing that gives us the advantage over our adversaries. And in fact, we really, not only this talk about shutting down Tomahawk missile base makes absolutely no sense from a military readiness standpoint, but we really destroyed much of our industrial base that provides the technology that keeps us ahead of our enemies.
Dan Garay, as you know, had very strong intervention on that point in the meeting yesterday at the National Security Action Summit. By the way, folks, if you're interested in that video, it will be available at securefreedom.org shortly. Admiral, before I let you go, very quickly, just a minute left. The president, rather surreptitiously, I think, agreed to something that Bill Clinton, you know, helped encourage back in the day, but did not ultimately sign on to, namely a prohibition on the use of anti-personnel landmines by the United States military. Very quickly, sir, what would the implications be of that? Apparently opposed by the Joint Chiefs and other military leaders.
Well, and this is another case. He doesn't listen to the military advice, the sound military advice that he's giving. It's just like in every other country in the world, every one of our adversaries are producing landmines and use them very effectively. It's the same way in our nuclear weapon program. Every nuclear nation in the world has modernized its nuclear inventory except one, the United States, and we have our leader who keeps going down and jeopardizing our national security.
Amen. Admiral Lyons, you are one of our leaders in holding him to account on this. We pray that your words of caution and your admonitions for a course correction will be heard. It was very much the leitmotif at the National Security Action Summit, which you starred in yesterday. Thank you for your service in these past few days, Admiral, and of course for your distinguished service to our country in uniform as well. We'll talk with you again soon, sir. Next up, we've got Andy McCarthy. We'll get his take on a new conservative foreign policy so clearly in need today. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. At the National Security Action Summit held in Washington yesterday, renowned pollster Kellyanne Conway unveiled the results of fresh public opinion research. Mrs. Conway reported that American voters she queried are overwhelmingly concerned about security issues and believe that their leaders are not doing enough to address them. Particularly striking was the response of significant numbers of women, blacks, and Hispanic voters. Like a majority of the population as a whole, they preferred a strategy described as peace through strength over one that seeks to disengage from foreign affairs in the hope that others will leave us alone in return. Mrs. Conway observed that candidates in the many close elections this fall ought to take note of these findings. It may be an opportunity to do well while doing good for the nation. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
I was diagnosed with PTSD. I got out and was sort of on my own.
Since 2003, more than 103,000 service members have been diagnosed with PTSD. Hope for the Warriors focuses not on what happened, but what happens next. Don't let them be forgotten. You can help restore hope to our military families.
My wife and my son are affected by combat, too.
Visit hopeforthewarriors.org today.
People know that they can turn to them and trust them.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, wherever the mission takes us, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for our nation, for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined, as we have the high privilege of being each week, by Andy McCarthy. Andy was one of the rock stars at the National Security Action Summit we've been discussing earlier in the program. He actually gave the closing keynote and brilliantly, as ever, summarized the kind of fight we're in and the impediments to winning it that we've imposed upon ourselves. Willful blindness, of course, is the way he described it in one of his best-selling books. Andy is the author of innumerable outstanding pieces in National Review and PJ Media, as well as two other books, at least among many that deserve note, The Grand Jihad and Faithless Execution, Making the Political Case for Obama's Impeachment. Andy, thank you again for just a breathtakingly interesting, brilliant, and necessary summation of the findings of the day. Talk a little bit about the problem that I think was kind of the leitmotif throughout and certainly of your remarks, and that is the failure to be honest with ourselves and most especially with the American people about the nature of the threat we're facing from what you've described aptly as the so-called moderate Islamists.
Well, Frank, I'm happy to do that, but first let me just underscore what an honor it was to appear at the summit and how grateful I am in general for all the great things they do for the country, but in particular for the conference to Impact America and Breitbart and, of course, the Center for Security Policy. I just thought it was such a well-done program, and I was honored to be a part of it, and to have the honor to conclude it was quite a thing for me. So I was very grateful for that and very grateful for the program. And I think you're quite right that the theme that I thought ran through all of the different presentations is the fact that we don't have a reality-based foreign policy that is premised on a desire and a determination to advance American interests. I think we're confusing what American interests are, and we're taking what is at times a fictional, if not outright fraudulent, understanding of what the world conditions are. So we don't know what our interests are. We're not acting on a factual representation of the world as it's presented to us, and obviously that has given us the disaster that we have at the moment.
Yeah. Talk about the two sort of examples that you've cited. One, these, as I say, so-called moderate Islamists, and the other, the Khorasan group. Who are these guys? Have you found them yet?
Yeah, you know, I looked all morning, Frank, and I've looked all week, and I can't seem to find them. But to go back to start with moderate Islamist, I think language, and I'm glad you asked about these two things together, because the language battle and the need to be not obtuse about language is, I think, vital to getting policy right, you know, to understand the world as it is and call things by their proper names, as everyone from Orwell forward, I think, has acknowledged, is absolutely vital to getting policy right. And the term moderate Islamist is another of these terms that you get repeatedly, I'd say systematically, out of progressive social engineers, that turns out to be, if you analyze it, a contradiction in terms. An Islamist is not just a Muslim. It's a particular kind of Muslim. We all know that there are moderate Muslims. In fact, we hope there are more of them than the non-moderate kind. But an Islamist is a very specific kind of Muslim. It's a Muslim who wants to impose Sharia.
It's the supremacist strain, right?
Right. So you can't be moderate and want to impose something that is innately not moderate. And even if you are not willing to commit terrorist acts in order to get Sharia imposed, you know, while we're very grateful for that, that doesn't make you a moderate. If you want to get, you know, the United States Constitution supplanted by the Sharia societal system, which is anti-freedom and anti-Western, that's not moderation of any kind.
Even if you're proposing to impose it upon us, because we're presumably not just going to roll over and accept it by non or pre-violent means.
Right.
That's, I guess, the point that most of these folks are using as the excuse for calling them moderates. How about the Khorasan group, Andy? Where did they come from? Who are they? And why is it so difficult to ascertain their whereabouts at the moment?
Well, the Khorasan group, Frank, doesn't exist, at least as a terrorist organization or any kind of operational combat unit. At best, it was a sort of advisory board around the leadership of al-Qaeda. It was, in fact, a faction within al-Qaeda to the extent it existed at all. And I point out that even al-Qaeda jihadists did not know of the existence of the Khorasan group. We're hearing about it because of the administration's aversion to stating clearly that the threat to the United States comes from al-Qaeda. And that, again, is a politicized determination that flows from the fact that the president, particularly during the reelection campaign, some three dozen times ran around the country claiming to have defeated al-Qaeda, to have put al-Qaeda on the path to defeat, and to have decimated it. That's a statement he even made at his infamous Las Vegas fundraiser the day after the mass murder attack at Benghazi.
No reality-based foreign policy there, that's for sure.
Yeah, right. Well, that's, you know, the left used to call that Bush's mission accomplished moment. And I'd say, you know, what Obama pulled the day after Benghazi puts that to shame.
Far more egregious, you're right. Andy, quickly, talk a little bit about the Islamic State, as you put it, of Saudi Arabia.
Well, yes, Frank. You know, the part of the reason I think that there's been such pressure to act against the Islamic State, other than the fact that this is an al-Qaeda offshoot, of course, that's rampaging through Iraq and Syria. But one of the reasons that it's really riveted attention in the West is its propensity to behead its captives. And I pointed out in a column at National Review a week or so ago that while these beheadings are certainly grisly, the three that ISIS did against Western journalists turn out to be five fewer than the Saudi government conducted in August. And what people, I think, need to understand, especially with the people like the president and Prime Minister Cameron, Secretary Kerry running around saying, you know, these grisly acts are non-Islamic or anti-Islamic, the only law in Saudi Arabia is Sharia. And any law enforcement and any punishment that the government inflicts is based on its interpretation of Sharia law. Now, somebody may think that Sheikh Obama, Sheikh Kerry, and Sheikh Cameron know more about Islam than the Saudis do, but I kind of doubt it.
Yeah, I think most people would say that's unlikely, indeed. Andy, very quickly, you've also been the most assiduous and I think most effective critic of Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the United States, for very good reasons, which you have documented at great length in numerous places. What is your reaction to the announcement of his resignation, and who might follow him?
Well, you know, I think, Frank, that Holder's resignation, whenever it happened, was going to be a time for revisiting what a tumultuous period his tenure was. And as I argued, and you're nice to point this out, before he was ever confirmed, I argued that he shouldn't be confirmed just based on the scandalous behavior that he engaged in during the Clinton administration, which would have been a career ender for most lawyers. But I think the enduring part of his legacy will be what is really the major, or one of the major, constitutional fronts of this administration, and that is the racially discriminatory, anti-constitutional enforcement of the civil rights laws. And if his replacement turns out to be Thomas Perez or someone similar, I think that what we get out of that is, unfortunately, a continuation of this anti-constitutionalism. And it's very difficult to understand how the people tolerate what they tolerate.
Well, let's hope they won't. Let's hope that won't be visited upon us. Andy McCarthy, I'm so grateful for your visits, most especially at the National Security Action Summit. Thank you for that and for talking with us today. Keep up the great work at National Review Online and PJ Media and elsewhere. Come back to us again very soon. Next up, Gordon Chang joins us. We'll talk about Hong Kong, Xi's control, and the India-U.S. relationship. And more straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook on Amazon.com.
I was diagnosed with PTSD. I got out and was sort of on my own.
Since 2003, more than 103,000 service members have been diagnosed with PTSD. Hope for the Warriors focuses not on what happened, but what happens next. Don't let them be forgotten. You can help restore hope to our military families.
My wife and my son are affected by combat, too.
Visit hopeforthewarriors.org today.
People know that they can turn to them and trust them.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I lost my arm.
I lost my legs.
But you can't see what I lost. Over 625,000 vets are suffering from traumatic brain injury
and post-traumatic stress. They're the wounds you can't see.
But with your help, we can expose the invisible wounds of war.
And get these veterans the help they desperately need.
100% of your donation goes toward building treatment centers. Help heal the invisible wounds of war. Donate at makeitvisible.org.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Annie Soldier Incorporated was started in August 2003 as a simple family effort to help the soldiers in one Army unit, thus the name. However, due to overwhelming requests, on January 1, 2004, the Annie Soldier effort was expanded so it would include any member of any of the armed services in harm's way. Won't you please help? Find out how by going to www.anysoldier.com today.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. Time for our regular update on what is developing in Asia with our duty expert on the subject and that of so many others, Fox News, Forbes.com, WorldAffairsJournal.com. Among them, he is, of course, Gordon Chang, one of the country's preeminent authorities on matters involving Asia. Gordon, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us.
Thank you, Frank.
A lot of things are happening in Asia at the moment, it seems. Perhaps more tectonic shifts in China. Talk a little bit, Gordon, about what you make of developments in Hong Kong of late and the Chinese government's response there, too.
For the last 4 days, we have seen student-led demonstrations in the streets of Hong Kong. We've seen overreaction by the Hong Kong police, which has triggered sympathy among other Hong Kong residents, especially the elderly, who, very interestingly, on Sunday, as the police tear-gassed students for no apparent purpose, a lot of elderly residents turned off their TVs and they walked down into the streets to show support with the students. This is really extraordinary. But basically, the Hong Kong authorities have lost control of the city, and people in Beijing are very nervous right now and are thinking of not only imposing martial law, but actually sending in troops, which is something that state media promised on Monday.
Should that happen, Gordon, is there any doubt about the outcome, but what might flow from it in terms of the Chinese status in the world, Hong Kong's role in the economy of China, and the like?
I think the People's Armed Police and the People's Liberation Army can establish order, but it would really be just a temporary one because people in Hong Kong right now have a lot of grievances. Some of them relate to governance. Some of them relate to other things. But you have a very unhappy population. You have a chief executive who is the chief political officer, like the governor, basically has very little support in society except among Beijing elements. And China right now is pretty nervous because for them to make the threats that they have, they're concerned about what we call democracy contagion. In other words, if people in Hong Kong have the right to vote in meaningful elections, then people in Shanghai are going to demand the same thing. And that's actually already occurred, Frank, in a small sympathy demonstration in the center of Shanghai by some people who not only expressed support for the students in Hong Kong, but who also demanded the right to vote in China itself.
Gordon Chang, you are one of the close monitors of what is happening inside Beijing itself. I'm told that the president of China, Xi Jinping, has just issued a new book, speaking of governance of China, by that name. What do you make today of his degree of control inside China itself, let alone in Hong Kong? Gordon, there are those who say, I was listening to a radio program last night, that he is the most powerful Chinese leader since Mao. I take it you don't agree.
Yeah, many people have said that, and the U.S. intelligence community have been saying for more than a year that Xi Jinping quickly consolidated his political position. But we've seen a lot of symptoms of disorder and dissension at the top. And although Xi intends to be the most powerful leader since Mao, I think he has a long way to go in order to consolidate his political control. You got to remember that he is a very firm, ardent supporter of Mao Zedong policies. And just a couple of days ago, he talked about how the party needs to move to Mao Zedong in order to survive. So I think that that's a symptom of, first of all, just being wrong-headed, of course, but also because I think that he's appealing to Mao because he needs to unify the party behind him. If he were in charge, he probably wouldn't be saying these things which sound terribly off-key. This is a very important development. We don't know exactly what's going on in Beijing, but I don't think we can say that he's really in charge right now.
And Gordon Chang, of course, one of the things that Mao Zedong policies entails is a lot of repression and tyranny, really. If you think back to the dark days, particularly of the Cultural Revolution under Mao, it was horrific. And I can't imagine that the people of China have much appetite for going back to something like those dark days, do they?
No, they don't. I mean, Mao, among many disaffected Chinese, has become a symbol of resistance. And so you see cab drivers, for instance, put portraits of Mao Zedong in their cabs. But I think more of that is just a protest against the corruption of the Communist Party today. I think Xi Jinping is not only looking down a pass toward Mao, he's also looking at Deng Xiaoping, who, of course, authorized the Tiananmen Square massacre of 25 years ago. And a number of people think all of these calls for martial law, all of these statements that the PLA, People's Liberation Army, is willing to, is going to be ordered to cross the border. This is basically leaders in Beijing who don't know what to do and so are falling back on really the worst sort of solutions. State media on Monday talked about sending over the People's Armed Police, which is basically the Chinese military, into Hong Kong. That's a very bad sign.
Unfortunately, it's accompanied by some other rather bad signs. And you wrote recently, Gordon, about the Chinese military going rogue. Talk about that, particularly against the backdrop of the visit by the Indian Prime Minister to Washington underway at the moment.
Prime Minister Modi is now in Washington. Today, he is in the Oval Office talking to President Obama. 10 days ago, Xi Jinping, the Chinese leader, was in New Delhi. And at the same time, there were incursions by the People's Liberation Army in Ladakh, which is high in the Himalayas. It's territory which is disputed by both India and China. And the number of people in saying that this is a sign of bad faith on the part of the Chinese leader to talk diplomacy while he's in New Delhi, but authorize these incursions. An alternate explanation is that Xi Jinping did not want these incursions to occur because they made him look duplicitous. And I actually think that the better explanation is that the army was acting pretty much on its own in terms of this very serious incursion, which occurred starting from September 10th and which has lasted for about 10 days or so. We are seeing Chinese military now thinking that they can act independently, maybe even implement their own foreign policy. There's a lot that is ambiguous at this point, but I don't think Xi Jinping actually controls the military, such as the way President Obama or any American president controls the American military.
One other issue for the Chinese leadership, Gordon Chang, of course, is the Uyghurs, the Muslim population in Western China. A prominent Uyghur dissident has just been sentenced to life in prison. What does that suggest about control concerns on the part of the Chinese in Beijing? And what is the likely response going to be from the Uyghurs?
Professor Ilam Toti is the most prominent Uyghur in China. He's you could say he's a dissident, but he's more a bridge trying to act as a sort of a form of communication between the Uyghurs and Beijing, and universally respected among not only Uyghurs, but people on the outside who know about China minority affairs. And the life sentence for essentially doing nothing is just staggering. And I think it shows that basically the moderates have lost in China, that all we have right now are hardline policies, which are getting worse. And this is the way that Xi Jinping has been dealing with the Tibetans and Uyghurs. This is his hardline policy in Hong Kong, where he's had the Hong Kong portfolio from 2007 to 2013. We're seeing his hardline policies being implemented in Hong Kong, as well as in Xinjiang, which is where the Uyghurs live. And clearly, we have policies that aren't working in Hong Kong. They're not working in Xinjiang, and they're not working in Tibet either.
Gordon, less than a minute left. Very quickly, there's some controversy. You mentioned Prime Minister Modi of India is in town. Apparently, the president threw a state dinner for him while he was fasting as part of his Hindu obligations. I can't imagine the president being so insensitive to Muslims while they're fasting for Ramadan. What's up with that?
Yep. There's a Hindu holiday and festival where Hindus are supposed to fast. And so Modi has told the White House staff that he would only be drinking liquids during his private dinner with President Obama, which was last night. And clearly, Modi was not going to change his religious beliefs for President Obama. And, you know, it's just one of those things that has caught attention. I think that the meeting should go well. The United States needs to reorient its policy away from China toward India.
Gordon Chang, thank you for helping us stay oriented on the issues of the day. Keep up the great work that you do in so many different outlets. Come back to us again next week. Hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.